You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into a What If edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm one of the co-hosts of this wonderful show. This is our second What If podcast as part of our Coronavirus on the Break series. Last week's podcast, check out from last Friday, was on Tayshaun Prince's block of Reggie Miller in Game 2 of the 2004 Eastern Conference Finals, the ramifications of losing that game for the Pacers, and how it probably robbed them their first NBA championship and led to a whole bunch of worse stuff for this Pacer franchise. I know, what an exciting moment to talk about. But on today's podcast, I want to take you back to the 1983 NBA season. So at this point, this would be the only season in the 1980s outside of the beginning of the decade and the end of the decade where a non-Lakers-Clippers team wins the title. The 76ers were well on their way to having one of the most dominant seasons in NBA history. They win 65 games. You have Moses Malone win the MVP. They sweep the Lakers in the NBA Finals. But that's not why we're going back to 1983. We're going back to 1983 because that is the year the Pacers sold to Herb and Mel Simon, a pair of real estate brothers from Indianapolis, and that will forever change the trajectory of this franchise, keeping them in Indianapolis and pretty much saving the Pacers maybe from existence. All right, so the Pacers used to be owned by two men, Frank Mariani and Sam Nassy. Now, if I butchered those names, I'm sorry. I am not great with names. They were a L.A. businessman who owned the Pacers, buying them in like 1979. They owned them for two or three seasons, but at this point in 1983, they are losing money left and right. They have a bad deal on the stadium where they actually don't. So a lot of NBA franchises right back in the day, right, especially a small market team like the Pacers, relied on ticket revenue, right? We're talking about, you know, there wasn't the big TV contracts, even for a small market, so you relied on how much money could you bring in from fans. Well, at this point, the Pacers are playing at Market Square Arena. It's about a 17,000-seat arena. They're only filling it up for about 10,000, which isn't terrible, actually, for the NBA at the time. But they have a really bad deal where they pay a really high rent, and they don't actually own the stadium, so they don't make any other money. It's at the time owned by Jerry Buss, obviously the Lakers owner. So this terrible deal leaves the Pacers losing probably $2-3 million a year, and these two guys just went out of the franchise. They didn't get a good deal. So come 1982-83, the team, which is kind of on its downhill spiral already, right? So they made the playoffs in 78. That would be the only time to make the NBA playoffs as an NBA franchise until, I think, the latter part of this decade. And they're on the downturn. So they don't have a good product. They don't have fans, and the owners are losing money. Recipe for moving, right? So the team basically says on April 5th, 1983, the owners come out and basically say, we either going to sell the team or we're going to give back to the league. Basically, at this point, right, you have to remember, we're in a point where franchises are worth money, but not a ton of money, right? So like the team is losing $2 million a year, and they would sell to Herb and Mel Simon for $10.5 million, right? So, you know, it'd be equivalent to an NBA team. Like the Pacers right now are probably worth $1 billion, losing $100 million a year, which they aren't. They probably, if they are losing money, it's maybe $5, $10 million because of the increased TV revenue that is the most recent contract, right? So that's the equivalent of that, right? So they're going to give the team back, which we've seen in NBA history before, right? So we saw that with the New Orleans Hornets that became the Pelicans. They were owned by the NBA for, I think, 3 or 4 years before the Benson family came in and bought them. Tom Benson, RIP. So anyway, so 1983, Pacers, right, April 5th, 1983, there comes out a bunch of articles, right, about this team. And this is a pivotal moment in the franchise history for a couple reasons, right? If the team gets given back to the league, they probably sell to the highest bidder. And considering where the league was at, there were 23 teams at this moment. So lots of cities clamoring for franchises. I mean, at this point, there still is not a second Los Angeles team. That's important to remember. And two, if they sell to a non-local group, they obviously could be moving, right? So I'm going to take you to an article. Let me take you to one. April 17th in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram that says, let's see who wrote this so I can get it right, by Larry Pantages. He's from the Knight Rider News Service. I don't know what that means back then. But it says there's been speculation centered on a group, which reportedly includes baseball star Reggie Jackson, that wishes to buy the Pacers and move the team to Anaheim, California. Remember, 1983, in just a year from now, the San Diego Clippers will be moved by Donald Sterling. Another awful NBA owner, to Los Angeles to play in Staples Center, or I guess at the time it's the Forum, same kind of move, right? So the Pacers could have been that team to move to the Clippers, right? So let's play that scenario. If that had happened, the Pacers, obviously, boom, they're no longer a franchise, right? If that happens, is Indiana ever going to NBA franchise again? Probably not, right? So you don't often get a second chance at a franchise. Look at Seattle, for example, right? They are without a team, and they want one back, but they haven't got one yet. I mean, right? So at this point, right, we're looking at 1982. There's teams in Boston, Philly, New Jersey, Washington, New York, Milwaukee, Atlanta, Detroit, Indiana, Chicago, Cleveland, San Antonio, Denver, Houston, Kansas City, Dallas, Utah, Los Angeles, Seattle, Phoenix, Golden State, which is San Francisco, Portland, and San Diego. So, right? So in the East alone, there are five more cities that don't have franchises that are going to want them, right? So you're looking at, now I'm blanking on who the East it would be, but four more in the East and three more out West at this point. So in the West, you're looking at a second Los Angeles team, obviously. Looking at a team in Oklahoma City. They obviously don't have one. Looking at New Orleans as the other missing team. And there should be another missing team if I can think off the top of my head. And then you have a team that moved, right? Kansas City moves to Sacramento. That's another team that's missing in this whole thing. You have a Denver team still. But you're missing three or four teams. And then out East, you're looking at cities like, why am I not hitting this right on the head to begin with? But cities like Miami doesn't have a team at this moment. Right, that's a big one. That would be probably the biggest market left that doesn't have a team. Charlotte doesn't have a team right now. Toronto doesn't have a team right now. The other one out East is Memphis at this time. Right, so those cities do not have a franchise yet. So you're already probably going to be behind those franchises in getting a team. So if the team sells to this Reddy Jackson group, you're moving down a scenario where this team obviously leaves Indiana, and you're talking about a 27-year gap. However, I think there's actually a more interesting part of this, right? So remember 1983. The Indianapolis Colts would move to Indiana just 1 year later, right? Now, there are articles where the Indianapolis mayor at the time, William Hudnut, one of actually Indiana's greatest mayors, Indianapolis' greatest mayors because of just what he did for amateur sports. I mean, he got the RCA Dome built. He kept the Pacers here, as you'll see later on and whatnot. He brought the Colts here. He helped get amateur events like NCAA tournaments to play here. He got some of the Pan America games to be played here. Like, he was just one of he really saw Indiana as an amateur sports capital of the world and really captured that and went and sort of really brought that vision for the city. But so the Pacers the Pacers leave in 1983. How likely is it that a NFL franchise comes into an empty sports town? Maybe that's true. Maybe the Ursa still say, oh, we'll do it and whatnot, but I think there's a likely scenario where you look at it, it's a downhill effect, right? There is a downhill effect to losing a franchise, being the city that lost a team. It's never been good ever in the history of like sports, losing a franchise that's not good. And so would an NFL team come? I don't know, maybe not. Maybe they'd be even more desperate than they would get the Colts to come, or maybe Ursa would look at it as like, oh, this city doesn't know how to handle their sports franchise, and it doesn't happen, right? Without the Pacers staying, there's probably a downhill effect where the Colts don't come, and then you're looking at a completely changed market. The other big thing here with the Pacers, you have to remember, if the Pacers leave, I'm not sure they become the center of the Big Ten, right? The big thing going for the Big Ten has always been they can play in Chicago or they can play in Indianapolis. The thing that was always going for Indianapolis is that it had a really good sports convention, a sports corporation, which is also formed right when the team sells to Herb and Mel Simon, right? That was all part of the deal because this whole deal that got Herb and Mel the team was a combination of where the stadium, which was owned by Buss, left Buss's control and was controlled by an Indiana sports corporation, which would be a pivotal force in actually bringing in the Colts and all the other future events, right? So there's this downhill effect where the Pacers leave. You don't see the Big Ten come here for games because the reason that the Big Ten plays basketball games in Indianapolis versus Chicago, and they rotate every few years, is because Indiana has a really, really good setup for basketball in terms of the stadium, right? So they have the new stadium now, but they had a good one back then in Marcus Arena, and they were a really well-run sports corporation. They just know how to run events, right? That's a big reason, you know, conventions and things come here, because Indiana knows how to run events. Indianapolis particularly knows how to run events, right? So there is this downhill effect where the Pacers leave. You don't have any of that revenue. You don't have the Colts. You don't have the sports amateur capital of the world, and you have the trajectory of Indianapolis completely changing, right? Because in 1983, it's this city kind of on the rise, right? They've got this really, right? The Simons were part of it. They have this really big, like mall company who is investing in downtown Sorrel Center Mall, which is a big deal in city's revitalization. But you have this big company, real estate company, kind of formed in Indianapolis. But if you don't get a, if you lose your sports franchises, you start to lose some of your identity, right? There's not, you know, there are, I'm not a huge fan of saying you need at all costs to keep your sports teams, but there is something that when you're a major city on the map, having a professional sports team does something. Now, maybe they still get the Colts, maybe they go get baseball, maybe it's a whole different town where it become a Colts and whatever version of the Indians are in the major leagues this time, right? Maybe they get one of those kind of teams. But like, you know, you really can't be a major city in America without a sports team. If you don't have a sports team, you're not really considered a top-level city. I mean, this is why, honestly, in a lot of places, and I'm glad I'm speaking on the Pacers podcast, not in the South where I work sometimes, is that the reason some of those southern cities are not taking this seriously, right? Alabama, Mississippi, Arkansas don't have sports teams. I mean, if there were, or don't have major sports teams, professional sports teams put relevancy to your city in a way that you cannot value. You can't put a dollar amount on, per se, right? I mean, the same thing can be said for, you know, if you go any of the plain states, right? Like, I guess Kansas City has kind of the Kansas City Chiefs, but like all those Iowa stuff like that. Like a city like Des Moines is not that far off from being Indianapolis, really. I mean, it's a couple, you know, sports teams change hands here or there, and Iowa's Indianapolis in the Midwest. I mean, there's things about Indianapolis that make it special, but it's not that much different. Like Columbus is a good example where they finally got a sports team, but they weren't taking it seriously as a major city until they got the Blue Jackets, and then Ohio State took off. I mean, there is a real value in having a sports team, and there's a downhill effect that if the Simons don't buy this Pacer team, the entire sports landscape of Indianapolis is just completely different. I mean, you're talking just a completely uprooting of the whole thing. So that's kind of me. That's the major what if. Now let's talk a couple minor what ifs. A minor what if to me is what happens if the team gets bought out by someone locally. So there was a discussion about the Lilly Endowment Fund buying the Pacers. What happens if the Simons don't buy the Pacer team? Let's say another little group steps up and does it. You know, there wasn't a ton of, this was really early on, the Lilly Endowment Fund ultimately said they weren't going to do it, but let's say another kind of group comes in, and let's say the Lilly Endowment Fund does decide to buy the team. Remember, there is something to say about how well-run this Pacers team is because of Herb and Mel Simon, because of their ability. I mean, certainly the team could spend more money, don't get me wrong, but there is something about how they just kind of, especially Herb, knows his basketball, trusts the right guys, hires the right people, and makes the right moves, right? I mean, you know, this team has been competitive for 3 decades now. Outside of a 5-year stretch, they've been competitive in the 90s, the early 2000s, and the 2010s. Every single time they've been competitive, right? Now they're kind of, right? They weren't competitive those first, you know, couple years under Herb and Mel, right? The first couple years when the Simons bought them, they were bad. And they were the second worst team for 4 or 5 years, but they finally turned the corner and then never returned, right? In 1989, they made the playoffs, I think, maybe the most of any team outside the Spurs. I mean, they are one of the most consistent franchises in the NBA currently. And there are some minor what-ifs where, if, you know, you have another owner, maybe they're not as good with the team, maybe they don't care as much, maybe they don't invest as much, maybe they don't make the right picks and whatnot, and you see a kind of different Pacers team form, right? I mean, maybe they don't take Reggie, maybe that group takes Steve Alford in 1989 instead of Reggie, and this team is not as good in the 90s, and then, you know, there's a whole kind of sprawl for that. Maybe the lottery one time and get Shaq, whatever, but who knows? But there is something about that where if you don't have the Simons here and you have another local franchise here, that it could lead to sort of a worse scenario. Okay, I'll take one break, and then I want to play out. I want to read a couple articles, just kind of things that have been said that are interesting, I thought, about this whole the Pacers selling. All right, so I'm going to give you a little inside look into what I was doing. So I have a newspaper archive prescription, thanks to my company I work for. And I was just kind of going far down into it and just kind of trying to read. So I was able to trace the Pacers back through a couple of different things, right? So they were, I think they were awarded an ABA franchise in 67, and then they sold twice between that and, or three times, sorry, not twice, twice between that and before the Simons took them over, once to a sports group, and then another time to, obviously, Massey. Or Nassy, I think his name is Nassy. I want to get that right. Yeah, it's Nassy. So it'll be interesting to see. You can see the progression of the Pacers, right? So you see them buy them in 1979, and you see this progression of just how the team got worse and worse, right? So they you know, obviously their post ABA teams are gone, but they don't really hold in their players, and then you can see just the way that the city, which is common among Latinos, when you don't, like, the thing about Indiana that is, Herb always says is they don't produce, you don't produce a good product, people don't show up, right? People in Indiana like basketball, but they want a good product. They don't necessarily need the best, greatest, awesome product, but they want a product that they think is trying, competitive, and is going to win games, and that's part of it, right? So you can kind of see that effect. You see the slow effect. But some of the interesting quotes I loved is just how much newspapers back then really, really dug into, like, the financial aspects of this. You have this great article in April 25th, 1982 in the Indy Star, where you have this IU professor, Lawrence Jurgen, compares Sam Nasty's financial situation to a martini. And I honestly don't think I even understand what he's saying. But here, I'm going to read what he said. So the article, I'm starting off here. The article says, the multimillionaire who is in the inventory liquidation box business, that's Nasty, was probably in the 70% tax bracket in 1981. But the new tax laws under the Reagan administration, wow, what a throwback, have reduced Nasty's bracket from 70% to 50%. So in other words, it's J-E-G-E-N. So Jagan said, if Sam buys a martini or business and pays a dollar, that's Sam Nasty, for it, he can deduct the dollar. In effect, Sam was paying 30 cents for the martini and the government was paying 70 cents. Under the 1982 law, however, Nasty is in the 50% bracket, meaning Uncle Sam is paying 50 cents for the martini and Sam is paying 50 cents. Now, Jagan explained, either way, I tell my students you might as well have two martinis. If you understood that, please tweet at me at FreemanAdam5 or Locked On Pacers, because I think what he was kind of saying was, like, the way the tax law was, he was getting a better tax break, but that wasn't even one of the best articles. So one of the ones I found really good was this one, December 21st, 1982 in the Indianapolis News, an old competitor of the Star, an opinion article that I can't seem to find a name on, which is interesting. It just says DM at the end, so I wonder if that was one of their old opinion guys. But he basically lambasts the owner and Bobby Leonard for not taking Larry Bird in the 1978 draft. The Pacers had the first pick in that draft trade and the third pick. Both times could have taken Bird, passed because of financial concerns and concerns that they couldn't, that he was, so Bird would stay next year in college and not join until 1980, so they couldn't afford that, whatever. Basically, the owner, the opinion article does a pretty good job of saying, well, basically, by not doing that, they've made all these bad moves. They got guys who didn't end up playing, like this guy named Dudley Bradley, who proved to be mostly a dud and is gone. So they'd waited. Their bad ticket sales are really tied to this. It was pretty funny. The article is tied, no bird in the hand worth? ? I thought it was a really funny opinion article. I mean, the things that people used to write back then where you get away with, how kind of biting you could be and clever, because there wasn't that, like, immediate feedback from social media where, like, you could put an article out and nobody could really respond to it. Like, that was the thing back then, is they had to go through the newspaper, so there's no way for them to, like, scream about it to all their friends, where now if you write one word wrong, social media can come at you in 5 seconds. Just some food for thought. Okay, so then there was another article, one more that I really enjoyed. And this is when they bought the team. So the Simons bought the team and they made this announcement, like, at midnight, they said, on April 27th. This is an April 28th, 1983 Indianapolis News article where Simon, in all his bravado, says, I promise to get 7-foot center Ralph Sampson here. Now, this member, 1983, Sampson, I think, is like a 2- or 3-time Naismith Player of the Year award and a 2-time champion. I mean, this Virginia team is just so dominant. The Pacers obviously got the second pick in this draft and would not draft Sampson, clearly. But the bravado of this and the just, like, it was very new owner syndrome, where you're like, because Simons are, like, extremely successful businessmen, right? You have to remember, and this is probably stolen from Ryan Russillo, says a lot, like, these owners are the best at what they do, or maybe Bill Simmons, one of the two, are the best at what they do. So they think when they walk in like this, they're also going to be the best, but they forget they're in a room with a bunch of, like, 30 other guys who think they're also the best. So, I mean, this is just Simon bravado, and it's great, and it's just like, and then Simon talking about how he doesn't really want to run the team, but he wants to kind of give him a place, but he wants the team to be in Indianapolis. And it really was kind of this is kind of the moment the Simons kind of took over Indianapolis, right? They did this, they did the mall downtown around the same time. And this is sort of where they became close to Indianapolis. I mean, they're Indianapolis' richest family, or one of them, if not Indianapolis' kind of first family in a way, in my opinion, at least. I don't know. I don't know if that really holds. I don't know if everybody knows who they are, but they're pretty rich. I mean, Ursay would now be one of Indiana's first family. But it's funny, these articles, you've got, like, quotes from Hudnut, obviously, but, like, Birch Bayh, who was the He was the senator back then. He is the father of Senator Evan Bayh, and all, yeah, got he like and he was a former Indiana senator and so on. So both the kind of a family there. But like how much they're praising him, and it was just, and they speculate in the article how much was spent. They say it's $10.5 million, like just the amount they get away with back then. And this is just funny, and to see that that new owner bravado, they would not get Ralph Sampson. One other thing I thought was kind of funny, this whole thing. So I started looking up the Pacers draft after Simons took over. So in the 1982 draft, they end up with the second pick. 1983 NBA draft, ended up with the second overall pick and took so Sampson went one. So there's a lot of what ifs here, right? So Sampson went one, and they took Steve Stepanovich, who never really turned out to be anything. The 1984 draft, they had the second pick, ended up trading it away, ended up being Sam Bowie. Interesting enough, I believe that trade was already like a foregone conclusion, right? Like they acquired it before the Simons took over. But to think that was the second pick in a draft where Hakeem went one and Jordan went three and Barkley went five, right? Just, and they ended up getting a draft pick in the draft, the 18th pick, took Vern Fleming. But to think at some point they were in a draft where if that pick had not gone that way, they could have had Michael Jordan, Charles Barkley is also crazy. Now, will they have played it or who the hell knows? 85 draft, obviously that's the one where they took Wayne Tisdale because they missed out on Patrick Ewing with the frozen envelope. And 86 draft was the first time where they finally, like, they picked Chuck Person, who's finally, you know, a pretty decent player for them. Not a lot of like guys that got taken at that point. Wasn't a really heavy draft. In 87 draft, so this is the one where they pick Reggie, and this is the first draft where they finally made like the right move, and this is where things start to turn, right? So they have like 4 years of terrible luck where like in some weird world, they probably, because obviously if you pick one of those guys, you don't end up picking that bad next year, but they could have had like maybe Hakeem 1 year, or could have had Ewing, or could have had Sampson, which honestly is not that good, so it doesn't really matter. But they finally turned the corner here and take Reggie. The next year they take Smith, which was a nice pick. It was the second overall pick, which is actually probably, he was probably the best player in that draft taken, right? I mean, you got Danny Manning, he went first, but Smith would probably be the best player in the 88 draft. Then 89, they end up taking George McLeod, not really anything. But that's the hit on back-to-back draft for the first time, probably in franchise history, and that definitely changes things for this team, because obviously Reggie and Smith would end up being the dominant two players on the Pacers over the next 10 years and be critical to them making a couple runs at an NBA championship. That's all I got. I think I got another what if I'm going to do from this after doing some research on this podcast. I think I'm going to pick. There's a lot of draft what ifs. I might do a whole one of just like, what if the Pacers end up with the first pick in this draft when they were the second worst and the worst team in the league or lost the lottery and this stuff. I mean, but I think I have a non Salmon related draft one. That's one I'll tease. I'm thinking of it. I will release it on our next Monday pod, Wednesday pod, whatever we do, our weekly pod. We might be doing that next Wednesday, but I'll release that. As always, you can tweet at us at Lockdown Pacers, me at Madam 5, and my co-host Tony at Teased NBA. That is all for today's Lockdown Pacers podcast, and we'll see you guys again next.